How's everybody doing tonight? I was trying to think of something that I wanted to write about this year. I had a pretty amazing season, but it can be hard to write about some of the good, amazing things that happened because over time they just start to feel pretty mundane. But I wanted to talk about something that did happen this season, and that was the failure of the tailings dam of the Mount Pauley mine in British Columbia. And I don't know how many of you have heard about this. I wanted to write about it and talk about it this year at this event and also Fisher Poets. It gives a tremendous platform for people to be able to talk about environmental issues and the issues we face as fishermen. So I drove up there last week to try to talk to some people about what their experience was with it, mostly because it just dropped off the radar. That was the thing that shocked me the most about it. I guess I'll read a little bit about what happened, just because I know there's so many people that are unfamiliar with it. At around 1 a.m. on the night of August 4th, the tailings impoundment of the Mount Pauley mine in the Cariboo region of British Columbia broke, releasing 10 million cubic meters of water and 4.5 of potentially toxic slurry into the surrounding watershed. The dam was not a dam like the ones spanning the river basins we have here, but more like a kiddie pool 4 square kilometers, the size of Central Park, that sits on top of the ground, with layered, compacted earthen walls. As I understand it, the tailings enclosure was built upon ground that had layers of subglacial and preglacial till. According to the report at the time of its construction in 1997, the foundation had been mischaracterized by the engineering firm contracted to design the dam in terms of its strength and load-bearing properties. Essentially, the bottom slipped out from under itself in about a 25-meter section, falling in and then liquefying. One of the things that happened shortly before I went up there is the same company that was responsible for the Mount Pauley disaster, Imperial Metals Corporation, quietly opened and began operating a new mine, the Red Chris Mine, on the Canadian side of the Stikine watershed, only 3 days after the government released its report on the failure of the Mount Pauley Dam. I'm mentioning the Stikine and the Fraser, and that's one of the reasons that we call this the transboundary watershed issue is because of the 10 mines that are being developed right now. 3 of the major watersheds and river systems that let out in Southeast, they all have this massive development slated. There's just been a huge boom in British Columbia as far as open pit mining goes. Lake Quesnel is a fjord lake that some claim is the deepest carved out by glaciers on Earth. It flows out into the Quesnel River at the town of Likely, population 300, and later joins the Fraser about 60 miles to the northwest. The Quesnel system is the second largest sockeye producing watershed on the Fraser, some years even surpassing the Adams, and the large forecast of returning sockeye in 2014 were the progeny of the massive return in 2010. I remember seeing pictures that year of Canadian drum seiners perched atop sets so massive, at first glance you assume they must be herring, the net billowing out in every direction below the water like cumulus clouds. When the dam had broken, the tailings had poured out into Hazeltine Creek, flowing out into nearby Pauley Lake and then rushing down towards Lake Quesnel. The creek bed had been meandering 6 feet across before the flood of silt and mud had scoured away the banks and trees, leaving a barren gorge 160 feet wide and carrying that debris field, as well as the sediment from around the creek into Lake Quesnel. On the 4th of August, I would have been showing up in Southeast Alaska to fish for those sockeye that were headed back to the Fraser River. On the 4th of August, I can remember exactly where I must have been along the timeline of the breach. I can trace my day through expenditures, receipts I saved to sift through around this time of year when I'm filing my taxes. At around 4:30 that morning, I would have been crossing the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, trying to make it to the SeaTac for a 6 a.m. flight to Ketchikan, where I would find a float plane to take me to Craig or Kilowog, so I could jump on a seiner, the last one still at the dock, waiting for me to show up, so we could fish the opener the next morning. And I'm sure nothing could have been farther from my mind than a small town in northern British Columbia that I'd never heard of. We were fishing on the coast, two on, two off, The weather was nice on the first closure. The harbor was full, and everyone went out to play soccer in the park and drink late into the night. The Fraser River sockeye run had a large, if not somewhat ambiguous, forecast that was predicted to come in somewhere between 7 and 73 million fish. That was the excuse the processors had given for scrapping our sockeye price in Bristol Bay, where I had just come from. And down in southeast, everyone was on the coast trying to get what they could of the more lucrative Fraser Run sockeye. As they traveled south, pushed in by high ocean temperatures, the boats that could get their hands on Washington permits would run down to Point Roberts in a week or two to fish on the northbound sockeye that had traveled down the coast and rounded Vancouver Island, aimed at their natal waters. The first footage that was taken of the mine site and streamed by news sources across the world came from a helicopter that arrived on the scene in Likely at around 8 a.m. to record the last of the fine brown effluent moving across the pits and craters of the moonscape left behind in the tailings enclosure. Media would come in droves to choke the campsites and the unpaved main street of the tiny town. And by the time I heard about it, the public interest stories had all but vanished. There was only one mention of it in the Ketchikan Daily News. And I thought surely there was gonna be some big outcry. People in the first reports were describing it as the Exxon of Canada, just the same way that news reporters filed away. It kind of just dropped from the headlines. And when I went up there more just to see what was still happening, I think the thing that interested me the most in all the time that I've thought about and written about the Pebble Mine, that this is the worst case scenario of any mine. And kind of the worst case scenario in that once it happened, the issue can feel like it was abandoned because the effects are not going to be the catastrophic footage of water and mud and tailings flowing down and wreaking havoc like an avalanche. It's going to be bioaccumulation of heavy metals that's going to take 20 or 30 years. But I think the refreshing thing about going up there and seeing the people that are working so hard to figure out what's happening with next year's run of fish and the smolt that will spend 1 year in the lake up there, that it was like waking up from a bad dream and finding out that everyone was still here and there's still a lot that can be done. One of the things I would strongly encourage everyone here to do is go online and check out a website for Salmon Beyond Borders. One of the things you could do is write your senator a letter telling them that you care about these issues. And the other thing you could do is show up next year and go fishing.